Good evening. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, January 17th, 2012 Carrboro Board of Aldermen meeting. The first item on our agenda is a request from visitors and speakers from the floor. It looks like I have one or two people signed up to speak on matters that are not already on our printed agenda. Dan, this resolution on corporate personhood, when oh, I see that's in B. Okay. All right, so we'll come to that in a moment. So, Tish Galou, would you please come up to the podium to address the board?
Good evening. I'm Tish Galou. Most of you know me. I'm from Orange County Justice United. I'm also on the environmental justice team of Justice United, and the co-chairs of our team are Minister Campbell from RENA, Rogers Eubanks Neighborhood Association, and Bonnie Hauser, who's from Orange County Voice. We've been working together for a couple of years on the issue of Rogers Road. We're here this evening to talk about the January 26th meeting, the Assembly of Governments, that's been called by the county commissioners to talk to the towns about setting a date certain to close the landfill and to find a solution for the funding of the entire Rogers Road mitigation plan. A copy of the plan is here for everyone. County Manager Clifton has told the commissioners that closing the landfill in 2013 is the best decision to make and the most economical way to deal with our garbage at this time. Mr. Clifton considered the option of making the landfill larger and the cost of other disposal sites in Durham and elsewhere, but concluded that it would be most cost-effective to close the landfill as planned in 2013. Closing the landfill ends the era that has contradicted our values as neighbors and stewards of the environment. When the Rogers Road community agreed to host the landfill in 1972, little did they know that they would face not one, but three landfills, a recycling transfer station, and other facilities over the next 40 years. Dangerous and frequent truck traffic, airborne odors, disease-carrying vermin, and other negative impacts would become the norm for their community that happens to date back to the 1700s. Then there's ongoing risk to water and air quality, which in turn affects their health and well-being. Home values have been negatively affected, and over 40 illegal dump sites have been found in their area. The Rogers Road community has been promised amenities repeatedly over the years, promises which have never been delivered. The community's proposed mitigation plan, which represents expectations that have been set over the last 40 years. As our elected officials prepare to close the landfill, now's the time to deliver on the promises. Kudos to the commissioners. They have agreed to move forward and connect water to the 80 homes that remain of the original historic Rogers community. These homes were built long before the first landfill was sited. The commissioners also agreed to clean up the illegal dump sites surrounding the community. There are approximately 45 in a three-quarter mile radius, and to restore buffers that will provide visual and impervious barriers to mitigate odors, vermin, and other impacts on their health and quality of life. These items were relatively inexpensive, and funding is to be divided by reserves set aside for the landfill closing. But the plan's not complete. There are still the outstanding issues of sewer service and a community center that was promised when the landfill was initially sited. Together, these items could cost over $3 million. There are many options to fund this one-time expense without raising taxes, we believe. There are grants from the state, federal governments, nonprofits, and a public-private partnership. There's also the option to sell all or a portion of the 60-acre green tract since it no longer will be needed for a landfill expansion. There's the option of floating a long-term bond. There's also the possibility of annexing the entire community into Chapel Hill, which mandates that sewer service be implemented within 3 years. If annexation is considered, hopefully we will include the portion that's already in Carrboro in order to unite the entire community, rather than having it split right down the middle of Rogers Road. We've dumped roughly 1 million tons of trash and run thousands of trucks on this historic community. This will always be a sad part of our county's heritage. On January 26th, our elected officials have the opportunity to make this right. You have the opportunity to help make this right. to set a date certain to close the landfill and provide the services that we have promised this important community. Please restore our relationship with our Rogers Road neighbors. They have been more than accommodating to us and our garbage for decades. We're asking all of you here tonight to join us on January 26th at the Assembly of Governments meeting and make sure that we finally act on these issues to restore the honor and the dignity of our entire county. Thank you for listening.
I feel the need to point to respond to that a little bit, Tish, and just say, you know, for the town of Carrboro, the closing of the landfill and the beginning of trucking our trash to a trash transfer station in Durham County will cost us about $200,000 a year, just a little bit over 1 cent on our tax rate.
Has that been determined by changing the routes, by looking at possible alternatives to the way you're doing it now?
That's because the trucks are taken off of their routes for a much longer time to drive to Durham, so that we have to add additional routes. We need additional trucks. We have to re-gear the trucks that we have so that they can drive at highway speeds. And we have to hire additional personnel and spend about $100,000 a year on additional diesel fuel for the trucks. 25,000 gallons of fuel per year to drive to Durham for our trash. $200,000 a year. Now, it's only 1 cent on the tax rate, so for my house that means it'll be an extra $350. Can I afford to pay an extra $350 to have my trash driven to Durham? I can. I can afford that. Not everybody in Carrboro can afford the impact of those taxes, but my question is this, is how is that a responsible use of taxpayer dollars, whether we can afford it or not?
I actually agree that that's exactly what you need to determine the best options for Carrboro, because Hillsborough has decided that it is more economical for them to leave and go to Durham because of their proximity to Durham. Chapel Hill is looking at every possible alternative, whether or not rerouting their trucks is the best option, or whether or not they should be looking at another at waste industries or another means of dealing with their garbage.
Well, I'm just trying to put the scale of the expense into context and say that $200,000 a year is a hell of a lot of money, and it's not $200,000 a year just for 2013-14, it's $200,000 a year every year. For comparison, our point-in-time count of chronically homeless people in Orange County shows that there's something like 38 people who've been homeless for a year or more, mm-hmm. who live in the woods and on the streets in Orange County. The cost of renting an apartment for every single last one of them to live in for all time, forever, from now on, would be about $230,000 a year. That's actually surprisingly not that much money.
You know,
Say that we should pay $200,000 a year to drive our trash to Durham, that we should have room in our budget to pay for that, but that we don't have room in our budget to pay for the expense of housing the homeless people who live on the streets seems like a strange set of priorities to me.
I believe that there are alternatives that will not cost Carrboro $200,000.
No, that's not true. Believe me, I've had my staff take a look at this issue. They're professionals. They're experts when it comes to trash collection. And their estimate is that there's $50,000 a year in capital costs amortized over 20 years, and $150,000 in energy and labor costs. And that's just for the town of Carrboro. Forget what it costs the town of Chapel Hill. And you've had your say, so let me have my say. We could build a trash transfer station in Orange County and avoid some $200,000 a year in expense for the taxpayers of the town of Carrboro, and probably, I don't know the figure, but hundreds of thousands of dollars more and expenses for the taxpayers of the people of Chapel Hill. Let's say that figure is something like $500,000 a year. It probably is about on that scale, maybe more. If we don't spend $500,000 a year to send our trash to Durham, but instead build a transfer station in Orange County, then, you know, I think what we ought to do is take that $500,000 a year that we're saving and ask the county to contribute some money as well, and put all of that money toward paying for the $3 million worth of improvements in the Rogers Road area that you're asking for. If Chapel Hill put up what they were going to save, if we put up what we were going to save, and if the county put up a significant, a meaningful contribution as well, it would not take long for us to build up to $3 million to do all those things that you're asking for. But, and this is the key thing, we would need about two more years to build our transfer station so that the landfill would need to close in more like 2015 instead of 2013. If the landfill stayed open till 2015 and we built the trash transfer station over the course of the next two or three years, then what I'm saying is there would be a tremendous offset in savings that we could be investing in making improvements in the Rogers Road area. And I realize that that is asking folks in the Rogers Road area to take on some additional burden for a couple more years. However, the reality is that, you know, and I've heard from folks in Justice United who've said, well, let's just go ahead and close the landfill in 2013, and if it takes till 2015 to build a transfer station, fine. And you guys, in the meantime, for 2 years, can drive your trash to Durham. But here's the thing. In order to drive our trash to Durham, we have to buy another truck. And once you've built a transfer station 3 years from now in Orange County, if in fact the county commissioners ever develop the chutzpah to actually do that, then we're left, suddenly we have an extra employee that we no longer need, we have an extra truck that we no longer need, we've paid for re-gearing of trucks, and we've spent $200,000 over the course of 2 years on diesel fuel that was totally unnecessary. I think it makes a lot more sense to say, let's extend out the life of the landfill through 2015 or something along those lines. I don't know the exact time frames, but whatever. Through something like 2015, and let's build a transfer station. And I've suggested a specific site that I think would work well for our community.
And which is where?
At the northwest corner of the intersection of I-40 and NC-86. By doing that, and then in terms of the money that Chapel Hill and Carrboro save, by doing it that way, we take that money and apply it to solving the problems on Rogers Road.
I've heard what you said. I respectfully ask that there be consideration in looking at going to people that do handle garbage every day. UNC went to Waste Industries and have found that a cost-effective way of dealing with their garbage. If Hillsborough is pulling out of the interlocal agreement, it means that the area or concentration of garbage changes so that I-40-86 interchange might not be a site that's actually workable for a transfer station. A transfer station may be one of the answers for the future, for our long-term look at garbage and where we're putting our garbage. And to look at not just our waste, but also at recycling and the entire operation. I do think that this is a really, really important discussion, and that we should spend the time on the 26th and hopefully spend some time together that we can look at the alternatives and work at it together. We do need a resolution. We think the best resolution at this point is to look at alternatives to having the landfill open. As the county manager has indicated, it doesn't seem to be cost-effective. They're losing business because of the tipping fee costs, which is bringing in less money, and the county running it. So we have to look at all of the alternatives to see which is the best and certainly what's best for Carrboro.
Well, I've been doing this for 20 years now, and I've been on the Solid Waste Management all the different solid waste management committees over 20 years now. I've been on the landfill owners group. I've been on the SWAB. I've been on the solid waste management planning committee. And I got to tell you, all of my experience says that after this landfill closes, if we don't have a transfer station in Orange County, then we never will. We're never going to build a waste-to-energy facility in this county. We're never going to build a solid waste transfer facility. We're never going to build a landfill. We're never going to build a mass composting facility. None of that is ever going to happen. All of those things are tougher to build, tougher to site than a transfer station. If we don't have the political will now to build a transfer station, then we're never going to develop it later on. Once you go to the so-called, quote-unquote, temporary arrangement of paying an extra $500,000 a year, whatever it is that Chapel Hill and Carborough will pay, to ship our waste to Durham, that will never get undone. I think there's been a tremendous and shameful failing of leadership on our county commission on this issue. And I think the situation needs to turn around completely. And I appreciate what you're saying in terms of the burden that this puts on the Rogers Road community. But from the beginning, and you're welcome to go, as I've gone, to Chapel Hill Town Hall and read the meeting minutes from 1972, from the beginning, that facility was proposed to be a 40 to 50-year facility. From 1972, that brings you to somewhere between 2012 and 2022. And it's constantly represented out there that somehow this landfill has gone over its time, that it's past time for it to close. Well, you know, actually, no. It's just at the beginning of the end of the time frame that was always projected from the beginning. 2015 is still on the short end of that range. It's 45 years, right smack in the middle of the estimated range of time that it was to be open. And I also want to correct you on a factual matter that I've not heard from anybody in the town of Hillsborough, and I've been meeting with Hillsborough elected officials for months now about this. I've not heard from anybody in Hillsborough that they want to pull out of our interlocal agreement and that they want to take their trash to Durham. That is not what they said. That is not what they've been saying. What they've been saying is the cost difference is small, and that if the county commissioners are going to abdicate their responsibility, then they're going to respond by making their own arrangements with Durham.
But that wasn't exactly the statement that Mayor Stevens made at an Assembly of Government meeting last year and the year before. But the intention on the part of Hillsborough is that in looking at closing the landfill, that they have an alternative. And that's exactly what you're looking to have, is an alternative. If the closing of the landfill is going to take place in 2013. And as I mentioned, I respectfully ask that there be more research done, that we look at the options that are out there. I don't agree totally with your history of the siting of the landfill. In 72, the first landfill was in a different site than it is now.
You are welcome to go to Chapel Hill Town Hall and read the Chapel Hill Town Council minutes. I literally did that. And I also went to Hillsborough and read the Orange County Commissioner minutes, and I sat around reading on microfilm the Chapel Hill newspaper coverage of it all. So you are welcome to do the kind of research that I've done on it. I've spent hours and hours delving into that topic. After you've done that, you're welcome to correct my history.
We have also done a tremendous amount of research on Rogers Road, the community, and what it has put up with for the last 40 years. And I think, quite frankly, if you were living with that mountain of garbage behind you, that you would be looking for closing that landfill, too.
I am looking to close that landfill. I'm absolutely eager to close that landfill. I'm just eager to have somewhere else to take the trash and once we do.
I agree. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, Mark.
Robert Dowling.
If you dare.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Members of the Board of Aldermen, my name is Robert Dowling. I'm the Executive Director of the Community Home Trust. I have just a brief request. The Home Trust Board of Directors approved a resolution asking that the County Commissioners consider reducing the impact fee for private sector developers who were required to build inclusionary units. And I'm here tonight to request your support of that resolution. Last week, I asked the Chapel Hill Town Council, and that petition was referred to their staff. And I understand if you would want to refer it to your staff. The rationale is that with inclusionary housing, which in Chapel Hill is mandatory and in Carrboro it's voluntary, in any case, though, if a developer builds housing for low-income people, they should have some, there should be some public recognition of the costs that they have. We nonprofits, when we pay the impact fees, we are eligible for reimbursement. And I want to be clear that because Habitat builds a lot of homes in Orange County, they pay those impact fees. They request that funds be reimbursed. And I would not want to hurt Habitat or any other nonprofits. So this reimbursement to the private sector should be a secondary priority to the nonprofits. But inclusionary housing has always been viewed as a public good and a public-private partnership that I think has worked fairly well over the years. And the private sector, as you all know, is struggling these days in real estate, and the more the burden seems to be on them. And doing this, even if the county doesn't have the money, if the council and the Board of Aldermen and the Community Home Trust request this to the county, and the county might approve it but not have the money, I think is public recognition of the burdens that are placed on the private sector. So with that, I will stop.
So is your specific proposal is that they would sell the unit at the affordable price within a certain time period, and if they did that, they would receive the, I guess you'd call it a rebate or refund? Or
any homes that they would sell as a result of inclusionary housing, which typically would go through Community Home Trust, which are in turn sold to a low-income buyer, they would be eligible to request reimbursement for a portion of the fee, not the entire fee.
Right.
But some portion. It could be a 50%, 20%. I think it's more the gesture that would be appreciated than the specific dollar amount there.
Do you see this as in any way helping the developers? Well, it's still going to be your job to sell the homes. Is that right?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So really all it's doing is giving them a better financial position.
If their impact fee is $6,000 and we agree to a third off, they would get $2,000 reimbursed to them after they sold the house to a low-income buyer. I mean, that would be a reasonable, I think, a proposition that I think would be welcomed by the private sector builders as well.
Thanks.
Robert, does the county currently have any kind of affordable housing strategy, such as inclusionary housing Chapel Hill has, or such as the density bonus that we have?
They do not, no.
Part of the, we've discussed that possibility with them before, and I think the feeling was that since their planning jurisdiction is really only in unincorporated areas with no sewer service, that that's not really where we should be targeting the creation of affordable housing from a policy perspective.
I hope that the board will refer this to staff and then approve it. A couple months ago, I had a developer say to me, if low-income housing, affordable housing, is a community good and it's something that we all support and we want as a community, that the burden of that should be shared. He said, we don't ask restaurants to pay for it. We don't ask shoe stores to pay for it. The only small business being asked to put in the pot are the small business that happens to build homes. And that I found that a compelling argument. Plus, if we want to maintain the goodwill of the developers and continue the cooperative relationships that we've had. I think this would go a long way in that, particularly when you look at the impact fee is slated to go up yet again, which is going to be hard on all of us and a lot of people in the building industry. But I would encourage the board to please support this.
I think the only thing we need to refer to staff is for them to bring us back a resolution on a future consent agenda to
That's
do
what
this.
I meant.
And so I would like to move that. And if you'll second. Is that okay, Jack?
Yeah, fine. I'll second.
All right, it's moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously.
Thank you all. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Robert.
Okay. And then Bill Madden.
Hey, Bill.
As you know, I live at 124th Fidelity Street. That's the west end of Fidelity Street towards Davy Road. Right across the street from me is this large, empty lot. Most of it is stony, so it's not really good for people to go out there and play frisbee or play soccer because you just could end up tripping and landing on a large rock. But it's pretty well left alone. And it got me to thinking because after you took off the ban for loitering down around the corner from where I live, and I was talking with someone who was in favor of lifting that ban and lives on the north side of Carborough, thinking that it'd be nice if more people from outside the area, more eyeballs, were coming through there, and that would help to keep the peace as far as people being to see what's going on. I also know that the county wants to build a Southwest Library, that the neighbors of Carborough Elementary School weren't too keen on that because they're concerned about traffic. Well, where I live on Fidelity Street, it's a pretty wide avenue. It's been very friendly towards people from outside the area coming and parking, so they can go to Farmer's Market on Wednesdays and on weekends. And haven't had any problem when we've seen large trains of cars coming in when people outside the neighborhood come to bury their dead. So I was thinking about maybe if you would seek to try and add a little more life to the neighborhood, take that area that's not used, that large tract right across from where I live, bring more people into that area that when I lived at Abbey Court, I kind of referred to as the part of Carborough that Carborough forgot. So if you would, try and find something better use for that. Try and find an area that's more, a little more welcome to the traffic needs of a library and something that would bring a lot more people over.
What property is this?
Right next to the cemetery. 124 Fidelity Street. You go out there, and basically the only use of that large, wide open spot right there is for people to go walk their dogs and let them do their business out there. Nobody goes out there to play because, like I said, there's large open spaces where there's some large rocks. And nobody's going to go out there and play with their kids because you got a risk of their kid landing and hitting a rock.
All right. Thank you for bringing that proposal to our attention.
Thank you.
Be talking to the county soon about some of those issues, and we'll take a look. We'll put this into the hopper, I guess is what I'm trying to say. All right. That brings us to item B1, a resolution on corporate personhood. I have one person signed up to speak. Do you want to move the resolution first or hear from?
Why don't we? I'll move the resolution, and if we need to make any modification after hearing from the individual, we can.
Okay.
I'm assuming we won't.
Go right ahead.
So moved.
All right. And Brian Gaston. If you can come up to the podium, please.
I'll second it.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Brian Gaston, a Carborough resident.
co-chair of the Student Environmental Action Coalition at UNC, and also with Move to Amend as a local chapter. I'm here to speak in favor of the adoption of the resolution affirming that corporations are not people and that money is not speech. Everyone in favor of this resolution, could you please stand up? Thank you. In the 2010 Citizens United case, our Supreme Court interpreted the Constitution in a way that attributes First Amendment rights to corporations and equates money to speech. This has potential disastrous consequences for a host of important issues that affect us all, including inhibiting the introduction of new legislation intended to protect our health and our environment. Since the ruling, corporations with a vested interest in opposing safer air quality standards, for example, could buy unlimited smear advertisements attacking a political candidate who would support more stringent air quality standards. A constitutional amendment to circumvent the Citizens United ruling is the first step toward reforming the campaign finance system to prevent wealthy corporations from essentially buying our politicians. I do not want corporations with seemingly unlimited resources to have more of a say in our government than individual citizens like you and me. I urge you to adopt this resolution affirming that corporations are not people and that money is not speech. Let's join the multitude of other cities across the nation, such as New York, Los Angeles, that have adopted similar resolutions in an effort to preserve American democracy. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you for that. Thank you for that speech. We have the resolution at our chairs. It's slightly different than the one that was in the packet, and perhaps on the web. And it has an additional whereas in that the Citizens United ruling has it may wrongly lead to further future legal decisions that even expand its holding in a further way. For example, there's currently a case in the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals in which the district court judge held that the Federal Election Campaign Act provision banning direct corporate contributions for federal office was unconstitutional. And there are groups out there now kind of lobbying to say that Citizens United should be expanded to not just allow contributions to entities, but to directly to candidates. And so it could get even worse. So I think this resolution is a very good one, a very timely one.
Thanks, Lydia.
Okay. Resolution's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, that is passed unanimously.
Thanks, Dan. And thanks to occupiers.
All right. That brings us to our consent agenda, Mr. Manager.
Item number one is approval of minutes of a previous meeting. Item number two is certification of the fire department roster. Item number three is assistance to firefighters grant award. Item number four is a request to approve a supplemental agreement with NCDOT for an extension of the construction completion date for the Elm Street sidewalk project. Item number five is an energy efficiency program update and approval of additional ARRA funds.
Move consent agenda.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed are passed unanimously. Brings us to item D1, a presentation on conservation easements at Carolina North.
This presentation is following the board's conversation in the spring regarding the Greenways Commission, and I believe Anna Wu is going to be making the presentation. Nope, it looks like I'm mistaken.
Good evening, Mayor, Alderman. It's a pleasure to be with you. My name is Bruce Runberg, Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities Planning and Construction at UNC Chapel Hill. And Anna Wu, Director of Facilities Planning and our University Architect, is also here. We have a presentation for you to bring you up to date on conservation areas at Carolina North. With that, I will sit down.
Thanks, Bruce.
Well done.
Yes, before we get started, did you find a laser pointer? Do we have a laser pointer?
I think we're going to, if I need it, I'll use the magic hand.
Kathy does have one, though, Adam.
Okay, thanks.
That's easy. Okay.
Thanks. Thanks, and good evening. So we wanted to come this evening to update you on the status of the conservation areas at Carolina North. Just to review, the University and Chapel Hill agreed to set aside six areas for conservation as part of our development agreement for Carolina North. The total set aside is 311 acres. This map is taken from the 2007 Carolina North Ecological Assessment Report. The conservation areas captured the areas shadiest darkest, which include wetlands, streams, steep slopes, and other ecologically sensitive areas. So the total acreage of Carolina North and Carrboro is 304 acres, and the total acreage of included in the conservation areas is 205. In the summer of 2009, we actually began to refine and correct the lines that were sketched out in the map for the conservation areas. So if you think about it, we were kind of at the 30,000-foot view when we were going through the negotiation. The ecological assessment was based on a much higher-level view. The next thing we did was to actually begin to geo-reference those areas onto the actual property. And what we found as we went through that geo-referencing exercise were a number of corrections that we would need to make. So what you see in light black are the 2009 conservation areas. It might be a little bit hard here. It might be the easiest, the most obvious one. And the purple lines show the minor refinements that we actually proposed. So, for example, this northeast corner of Area 3 jutted over the neighboring property, and so we drew that line. Maybe I need to do it here. Area 4 actually overlaps with the development area, and so we reshaped 4 to remove it from the development area and better protect a stream that hadn't been included before. And so you see some other minor areas. So these corrections and some others still maintain the total acreage at 311 acres, making some slight adjustments to the original shapes to resolve those conflicts. At the same time, we also went back out to the field. And so we asked our consultants, Biohabitats, to evaluate the existing conditions of the conservation areas and to identify all the physical attributes of each area. So they identified natural features that were suitable for protection, including streams, stream buffers, wetlands, steep slopes, and mature forests. They also identified some existing features that are inconsistent with conservation, namely the landfill, monitoring wells, utility corridors, and right-of-ways for adjacent roads. This report was published in July of 2011 and is available online. At the same time, we held workshops with faculty, researchers, and staff to discuss research, operational, and recreational uses that fall within the parameters of our agreement. They challenged us to improve the ecological value and connectivity of these areas, to consolidate or extend areas so that larger continuous tracts would be protected, to preserve more mature forests, and to protect additional streams, stream buffers, and wildlife corridors, and to eliminate areas such as the landfill and impoundment that should be restored and not conserved. So this slide shows the way we propose to improve the quality of the conservation areas while maintaining the same acreage. So you see it proposes to move Area 1 and consolidate it with Area 2, bringing Area 2 further north out of the landfill and impoundment. So this reshaped Area 2 also protects some unique xeric forest, additional steep slopes, and ephemeral streams, while excluding the impoundment and the landfill. We removed Area 3 because that's where we have the active groundwater remediation and the wells and the pipes associated with that. And we reshaped Area 4 to better protect that stream that you see in this drawing. We took the acreage from Area 3 and used that to reshape the area in Carborough, which then allows also connectivity to Area 4. So it incorporates the previous corrections. The changes that we describe preserves the original intent of the conservation areas while at the same time actually providing better stewardship of the natural resources of Carolina North. And so this is what we were pretty excited to be able to update people on. So as we move to the actual conservation, the method of putting these areas into conservation, we in consultation with state property have been advised that we'll use a restrictive covenant as the method. We will have to obtain all the state approvals before establishing these areas, and we will select, it's our intent to select a third-party monitor to oversee adherence to the restrictive covenants. And this process we've not yet moved forward on this particular process. The restrictive covenants will prohibit and allow the same activities as those described in the development agreement within the conservation areas. And we are obligated to put these in this protection into place before we can begin construction on the first building. We also wanted to share with you some websites where you can find up-to-date information. We're posting updates as well as related reports, permits, and other documents on our Carolina North webpage. You also can see where you can find information about ongoing projects. And we would suggest that the Facebook page for the Carolina North Forest is where visitors to the forest can find the most current information about trail conditions. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Could you just go back and show us a comparison of the slides of sort of where the conservation areas were and where they are now? Or
okay,
this slide and the other slide?
Sure. You mean the original exhibit?
Right. So what you're saying that Area 3 was compensated for by adding some area in
Carborough? We actually took this acreage and we reconfigured 4 and then connected across.
So it's that part that's
area
right above the top of the P.H. Craig mm-hmm. tract
right.
that you've added to the
because this stream, we wanted to protect this stream.
Okay.
So if you go back to 6... Oh, this is the just correcting of the lines. And then here is the proposal.
Nice.
So
you get a better wildlife corridor.
Mm-hmm.
You get a better wildlife corridor by doing that as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. So before, 5 and 6 were completely disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have a chance to link them. And also by reshaping 4 and extending it down here, you have that connectivity across.
Okay. In I apologize if you already explained this and I just didn't pick up on it, but these conservation areas as they were on the previous slide were are sort of nailed down, I think, in your development agreement with the town of Chapel Hill. Is that right?
That's correct. They are included in that.
So this modification to the various areas is something that you're asking the town of Chapel Hill to approve, or they have already approved it?
No. This change can be done as a minor modification to the development agreement, which is actually a town manager approval.
Okay.
However, given we agreed that it would go through a process that is open for council and citizen comment.
Okay.
So the town manager will be taking those comments into consideration as he hopefully approves this, but it's not a council action.
Okay. So, and so the purpose of the presentation is both to inform us and to sort of get some perspective from Carborough or...
Well, we wanted to...
I mean, I appreciate your coming. Let me be clear.
We certainly wanted to give you an update on that, and we will be going forward with the process with Chapel Hill. Actually, next week will be the next step in that process. We're updating you, just like we've given ongoing updates to Chapel Hill and obviously our Board of Trustees. We keep them informed because they are part of the approval process.
Naturally. Well, I do think it's good. I've heard folks, some staff members of the Botanical Garden point out before that the previous arrangement, or I guess what's under the, what, I guess technically it's the current arrangement for the moment, was sort of more broken up than mm-hmm. than is really desirable in terms of creating connected wildlife corridors. So this does seem to do a better job of that. I mean, I think it would be still more ideal to for all these for areas 1 and 2 to connect to it. But I won't pretend to understand all of the complex considerations that you have to take into account. So that's just my comment on it.
For the next 50 years, they'll be able to.
Well, right. Yeah, that
is not be anything in between under the current development agreement. Is that right?
We have committed to remain in those gray areas over the next 50 years, yes.
So the area north of there, the in between 2 and 4, I mean, apart from that one gray area there, would most of that white space on there is not slated for development at the moment, but we don't know what will happen.
We don't know what the next generation will decide.
All right.
Yeah, hi, Anna. My question is, I've been out on the Pumpkin Trail lately, and I wondered what is going on out there right now?
Yes, I'm happy to answer that. We have a duct bank project that is underway. We actually have cleared the route for the duct bank. We did that, I guess it was before the holiday. So we'll be doing construction of this utility corridor, this utility duct bank, beginning in February. And so that'll all take place within that cleared corridor, after which we will be just restoring that area and putting in place a greenway, which is also included as a requirement in the development agreement.
And so that greenway will go kind of along where that duct bank is right now?
Yeah, it will go, I think we're going to have to use this map. It'll come down from Homestead, and then it'll connect to the existing municipal drive. Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am.
Hey, Anna.
Hi,
I wanted to know if this is now the beginning of or will become part of a conservation management plan. Is that in the works? I know we talked about that on the Greenway Commission. We didn't have a mm-hmm. direct answer. Is this the beginning of it, or?
Well, yes. I mean, there will be the do's and don'ts, what's allowed and what's not permitted. That's all outlined in the development agreement. So the restrictive covenant language will obviously draw from that. We are in the process of developing an overall management plan for the tract, and that is in process.
Who is your third-party manager?
We haven't identified that individual or group yet. We want to get through the process and then go through a determination of who's the best person, group, individual, company to just check our compliance on an annual basis so we can report that.
I can't help asking you a question that I'm sure you're not really totally allowed to answer for me, but in terms of the area that's within Carrboro's jurisdiction that's not under conservation easements as you as proposed there, the area south of Sewell School Road on the west side of Sewell School, what is the university's thinking at this point, bearing in mind that you're not in charge of the whole university, but what is the thinking at this point in terms of how that might be used or when?
We don't have any current plans, any projects planned for that area now. And when we talk about the tract, the entire tract, we did make a commitment to limit our development to the gray area over the next 50 years, looking at the entire tract.
Okay. So it's, the status of it is essentially like the area between 2 and 4 that I was talking about earlier, which is, you know,
it's what we would... we
long-term future of Carolina North, but other than that, we can't really say.
Yeah, we describe it as the limited development area, and there are certain things, activities that we, you know, we can still maintain the areas. There's still...
So I have...
And actually, to Randy's point, we did make a commitment for a school site, and the school site can happen in the white zone.
Okay. So the schools, so, okay.
And that would be contiguous with two schools that are...
The site hasn't yet been determined. That's something we would...
That's one possibility.
We would...
Right, but they're in that that area is what I'm saying. Because that's right off of Sewell, is that correct?
I think she's saying that's not been...
That hasn't been firmed up. I mean, that's... we've had conversations with the Chapel Hill Carrboro school system over the years, but we have not firmed up a site yet for that, for that school site.
So I guess I have just one other comment on all of this, which is, you know, I think Chancellor Meeser was the one who termed this all Carolina North, but for those of us who've been around here longer, we've known it for a long time as the Horace Williams Tract. Mm-hmm. And I think it's fine to call it Carolina North if you want. I think it would be appropriate to recognize that this entire property, or I think every bit of that property, was given to the university by former philosophy professor Horace Williams, and that as his name is sort of being... sort of potentially kind of stripped off of the property through calling it Carolina North, that it would be appropriate for the university to consider naming some or all of the natural areas that are being preserved after Professor Williams in recognition of the value of his donation to the university.
That's a cool idea.
I've got one more question. I was wondering if there's a forest management plan that's in the process or been made, or what's
it's
the
actually
status?
In process.
It's in process. Okay. And is that have public input in that process? Or?
Yeah. Eventually, as we get it more firmed up, we'll get input on that.
Okay. Good. Thanks.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate your being here tonight to keep us in the loop.
Thank you.
Thanks, Anna.
All right.
Mark, I'd like to recommend that, that this report be shared with the Greenway Commission when they meet in March. If there's new folks who are on the Greenway Commission, and it may be that having a UNC small mini session that shares this would be helpful.
Or they could just, you know, watch the video and thus they'll get the presentation.
That would be fine.
All right, we'll find a way to share it with the Greenways Commission somehow.
So I'll move the resolution, attachment A, receiving the report.
All right. What is the resolution? It's just receiving
accepting the report and asking UNC, who just left, to stay in touch with us on this.
Can we formally add to the resolution the recommendation that some part of the natural area be named for Horace Williams?
Absolutely.
Yes, that's a friendly amendment.
All right. So,
thank you for that.
Been moved and who seconded that?
I'll second.
Okay. All right. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. matter passed unanimously. All right, Baldwin Park Garden Expansion Proposal, Mr. Manager.
This is a follow-up from the item that the board approved in December. The Baldwin Park Garden Group asked for a chance to speak to the board and make a further request to expand the garden. Matthew Campbell from the Garden Group is here.
Hi, I'm Matthew Campbell, and I represent the Baldwin Park Community Garden. As Matt was saying, there was a little discrepancy back in December with what happened before, so I wanted to kind of clarify our position on what we were actually looking for with the expansion of the garden. There are actually four issues that I'd like to talk about. First are the placement of a cistern and a shed that were brought over from another garden that had joined us recently. Second is the expansion of the garden perimeter that we currently have. Also, an installation of a rainwater catchment system and a request for signage for the garden from the town. Here you can see just a visual of the cistern that was donated to us from the North Side Garden, which had to vacate its premises. And then here is the shed. I'm going to just show you that the cistern is an 8-foot diameter, and as you can see, it's completely closed and sealed. There's no way to actually get inside of it. It's a liability concern. And the shed is roughly a 6x8, very basic shed. This is the current location of the perimeter that was allotted to the Baldwin Garden. And we are requesting permission to locate the cistern just on the northwest corner, just on the exterior of the fence line. And then we would like to put the shed just on the exterior of the fence line also, so we can access it from the garden but without taking up space. A few things to consider. For one, the cistern initially in the initial contract was already allowed to be outside of the fence. Initially, it was supposed to be up near a picnic shelter. It makes a little more sense for us to have it close to the garden. We don't really want to have the cistern and the shed within the confines of the fence. It's a fair amount of expense for us to build the fence, and so all that space inside is fairly valuable to us. We'd like to be able to use all of it for garden plots. Both the cistern and the shed are sealed and locked, and we don't really see them having much of a liability issue for the town and for any of the patrons at the park. And then the spaces that we would like to put the cistern and the shed really don't have too much of other value at the park. Now, one of the expansion of the garden is really one of the bigger issues that we're facing now. As I was saying, we just incorporated the membership of another fairly large garden that was asked to vacate their spot up in the North Side neighborhood. So we've more than doubled our membership. We currently have 22 plots in our garden, and we have 43 people that want a plot. So we're way over our capacity. We don't really have any more space now to have any more members from our neighborhood that would like plots to join. And so the expansion that we're asking for would allow us to accommodate 18 additional plots. The current garden use is the 3,456 square feet. With the expansion that we're asking for, it would bring it up to 5,600 square feet roughly, which is equivalent to 0.12 acres. So it's actually not a very big space. It would only be 5.9% of all of Baldwin Park. In the image here, this is just a zoomed-in version of what the park actually extends all the way down to here. But the yellow is where we would like to expand it. The current park is 72 feet long by 48 feet wide, and we'd like to ask for an additional 45 feet in length. We would keep the cistern in the same location on the northwest corner of what currently is the garden. And if we were allowed the expansion, we would like to have the shed located in that, the new northwest corner of where the garden is. The rainwater catchment system technically is actually already approved. The Board of Parks and Rec just had asked us to put together a proposal, which I have done, and it's attached at the very end of our presentation here. I don't necessarily want to go through all the details of it, but I'll just show you roughly what we're proposing. We would be putting gutters on both sides of a picnic shelter that's at the park currently, and piping underground through the park, but avoiding any of the recreational areas that are already there, through the garden and then to the cistern.
Would that require pumping?
It's all gravity fed. We have the grade we need to get the water all the way down there to completely fill the cistern in that location is a large part of why we wanted the cistern located there.
Where was the original plan going to have the cistern?
Well, the original proposal had allowed for a cistern to be located, I think, just on the corner of the picnic shelter, right around the corner of it here. For aesthetic reasons and practicality reasons, we had thought that it might be better to have it right next to the garden, also moving it away from where other parkgoers use and have it out of their way. So there's a detailed explanation of the whole water catchment system at the end of the presentation, which I think you already have. Before we get to that, do you have any questions for me as far as what I've talked about before, and then I'll pass things on to Katie.
Go ahead.
In the previous slide, you showed the yellow additional area.
Yes.
So, my memory serves me, from where that yellow square is added onto the red rectangle, isn't there a slope that starts to...
So the terrain generally is sloping this direction and slightly this direction.
Okay.
It is a little steeper on this portion of it.
Yeah.
But it's still very viable as a garden spot.
It is. So will you have to amend that? Will you have to level it?
We wouldn't really change the terrain. Okay. We would just level our plots. We have raised beds that we would put in there level.
Right. Okay.
But without altering the terrain.
Dan.
Yeah, Matthew. Have you read the resolution that's in our packet on this?
I'm not sure which one you're referring to.
Attachment A.
What does it say?
Take a minute to read that. My question is whether that's, that's moving things forward in the way that is helpful to you all, or if there's something more you're requesting.
It says
we're going to basically refer to staff for further analysis and,
as far as all the loose items and anything like that, there, a bunch of fencing and materials had been brought over from the Northside Garden because they were in a rush to remove everything from their location. A while back, everything was moved and had been just put on the outside of the fence. We have since then moved everything inside the perimeter of the fence that we have.
Okay, so that's
with the exception of the shed, which was hard to move, and the cistern are currently just sitting outside the fence, very close to where we've proposed here, with hoping on the pending judgment of tonight's meeting, basically.
Well, under car row regulations, the cistern's not a loose item, so you're okay there.
So,
and the rest is just referring this to the staff, so the board would not be taking any action tonight other than to ask staff to bring us back something on this.
Okay, so the cistern can stay outside?
For
is
now,
that, is that,
yeah.
Is that what this means? And the shed as well? And as a permanent...
Right, we wouldn't be making the permanent determination. And Matt, are there questions still from staff perspective on those points, those two particular points?
Not particularly on those points. The small loose items language that you pointed out, I believe they had a work day yesterday and took care of that. Okay. The cistern and shed I can remain where they are for now until we have a chance to really look at it. We just didn't want to make a recommendation at this point, not having had a chance to really consider everything.
In terms of the expansion and the rainwater catchment.
Yeah, because there are some questions about the Owosso easement and the impact on the stormwater work that we've done out there. We just want to have a chance to look at it.
Great. Thanks, Matt.
Well, as all the loose material is within the fence now, so it's not an issue.
Okay.
Is there a timeline for the staff recommendation?
When would you expect to get back to us, Mr. Manager?
Probably February. At the February regular meeting.
The only one issue we had in last year, you know, time is an issue with this. We lost our growing season last year basically because we weren't able to get things going in time, and the growing season here does start in February. So it's something that we would like to move forward with as quickly as we could.
We'll try to get back to you.
Yeah.
Matt, could you think we could get it back before our February 7th meeting?
Yes. That's what we'll target.
Great.
I think it's great that we have the option that's originally there for where the cistern is, and that staff is going to be looking into the viability of this current proposal. But yeah. I would encourage the gardeners to consider the having the cistern in the upper part, just because you're maximizing the amount of gravity feed you have. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you take it to where you currently have it, you're kind of putting it at the lowest point, and then the question of how easy it can flow to the various plots.
We had considered that issue, but part of our reasoning for putting it there is we actually don't want people to just be able to hook up a hose to it and run it to their plots, because basically they use up all the water real quickly. If you have to use it with a bucket,
okay,
you're going to be very responsible in how you meter out the amount of, because we're not going to be able to collect very much rain. It's not a huge shed roof that we're collecting off of. So
right.
We do want to be resourceful as possible with the amount that we're going to have.
I know that the other gardens have two cisterns, so there could be a way in which you could have a smaller cistern in the garden, and then you could serve that purpose where it wouldn't be used so much. But you could very easily capture the water at the upper one,
yep.
So just for y'all to consider.
Yeah, in the future, that may come before you again. So.
Great, thanks.
Yes. How many households are currently using the garden?
Well, we have 43, my list is over there. I have 43 people that are interested in plots currently. We have 22 in our current space, which is the red, and we could fit about 18 more into the yellow.
And how many of those live in the adjacent neighborhood?
Exact numbers on
some.
Oh, a fair amount. I mean, the majority of them live within the neighborhood in walking distance.
Walking distance is different than in the neighborhood. I'm within walking distance, and I don't live in that neighborhood. So.
Well, I guess it depends what you consider walking. But even just the street, Broad Street, I'd say we probably have 10 just from Broad Street.
Okay. I'm just real concerned that the priority remains with the people who live in the neighborhood.
Which?
Who may be a little shy about approaching the garden, and yet, because I know that 15, you know, the original garden was 15 years ago there. We had a community garden there for a while.
Okay.
And it kind of dissipated. But part of the reason that it fell apart was that people were feeling pushed out of their neighborhood, out of their community, because the surrounding neighborhood takes great pride in that park, and the history of that park is very much tied in with the history of the Carborough Chapel Hill African American community. So I want to make sure that it's
the outreach is a big part of our goal as a community garden, though, and we have canvassed the community, the neighborhood around the garden, to make people aware that it's there and that it's for them.
Are there members of the surrounding community, like on your steering committee and on your decision making group?
Yes.
Everybody on the group is from that street.
Yes.
Okay. It'd be
or maybe with the exception of one not from the street. Okay. But
it would be helpful for me to see a list of garden members.
Okay, I have it right here.
Okay, if you can just send that to us and with their addresses.
Okay.
Because I think it's an important consideration with that particular park.
Okay.
Mr. Baldwin, who bought that property in about 1880, was a prominent member of the African American community in this area, and his grandchildren who sold that property to the town of Carrboro for, I don't know, it was a song, $500 or something like that.
Yeah.
For a song to create a resource for what was then an almost exclusively African American neighborhood. And while, the neighborhood certainly has changed over the years and will continue to change, I think there's a feeling that we want to see people of all races and backgrounds participating in all the things that happen at Baldwin Park.
Yeah. Or it could look like there was a takeover of the park.
And that's
not our intention. We want as much community involvement as possible, which is a big part of our goal.
Okay.
Right. Well, especially because the north side, community garden had to be dismantled.
That's a large part of why this is even happening.
Exactly.
We're trying to help them out as much as we can as well. So.
One question, just for the sake of speeding things up, the gutters aren't in question right now, and it seems like the proposal is not.
Well, we had.
Is there a change in the gutters? I'm just wondering if you all could be working on that while.
We can. The catchment system basically just needs a stamp of approval from Parks and Rec Department. I think the understanding I had that they just needed us to submit a formal request, and they wanted to have the chance to look it over and let us know what was going to work and what wasn't with what they needed.
Would that be possible, given, to advance, because it seems like the gutters aren't going to change, that they could maybe be working to.
There's still some questions and some conversation back and forth regarding who's actually going to perform the installation of the gutters, mm-hmm. and that's a conversation that's been going on for a while between the town and the garden group.
As long as we're on gutters for one moment, let me. I'm trying to. Maybe you addressed this point and I just missed it, but you're talking about gutters on the picnic shelter.
On the picnic shelter.
And you showed this, the nice blue line connecting the two.
The blue line is the piping that'll go underground from the shelter, carrying the water to a cistern.
And how will it magically go from the ground up to the?
Because we have gravity flow. We have grade from the slab that shelter is on to the corner there. We have about 7.5 feet of grade downhill. So we have more than enough.
So the cistern is going to sit pretty low to the ground.
It'll be about 18. And we're going to build a platform. It'll be sitting on dirt that'll be raised and held in place about 18 inches off the ground.
But the line from the picnic shelter to the edge of the garden, all of that is going to be completely underground. Is that right?
All of it.
Okay, because we don't want any kind
all
of tripping
piping.
Hazard or anything.
No. All the piping.
And there has traditionally been it's informal, but there's a pedestrian cut through from Bynum Street in Chapel Hill. Where is that located?
You see, there's a sidewalk here.
Uh huh.
And it kind of cuts across through here.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And so it's all on
another
the
one. Kind of cuts across
right
over there. There's a little bridge.
That one's a little sketchier.
It's someone's private property. The lady allows people to walk across her bridge,
right.
but the one across the side is the one that's generally most that we use.
Okay, thanks.
And then, Katie, you want to present the last?
I have one question. Are there any of the? Does the town have any issues? They outline some of them in the agenda notes.
Can you come up to the microphone?
Yeah, so people at home can hear you. Even Leo's not that skinny.
I'm just wondering if there's any issues that the town has, which has been addressed in the resolution, or I know there was the Owasa easement or the stream buffer that could be discussed now just to advance this conversation so that when we get to February 7th, we can make a decision.
We're not prepared to do so tonight.
Well, I'll just put out there that we are aware that the stream, that the garden is close to the stream buffer. We went out there today and measured it, so we know that the existing fence line is 25 feet from the stream, which I'm not familiar enough with what the stream buffer is, but I know that the extension that we've talked about, the ultimate extension, will not come any closer to the stream than the garden already does.
Perhaps, Randy, would you know off the top of your head what the what a buffer around that kind of stream would be?
Depends on the drainage area, and I think the other question is about what you can do within the buffer. But
that's the more important question, is what's allowed within the buffer.
Mm-hmm. And that's why we've asked for some time to take a look at this.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, February 7th is soon enough.
Okay. Thanks very much. All right. Is there a motion for the resolution?
There's one additional little portion that, that Katie's going to present on that.
I'll be very fast, I promise.
I've got it here for you.
My name is Katie Ullman, and I just want to talk very briefly on behalf of the Carborough Parks Project. We were approved last year to help get Baldwin Garden up off its feet. We're just asking, Carborough Parks Project is asking the town if they would help purchase a sign for the garden, number one, to acknowledge the that it is Baldwin Park Community Garden, two, to acknowledge the local donors, show some appreciation and recognition to local people who have supported the garden, and also to show some contact information for passerbyers. I've got a rough estimate of about $200, hoping that's the high end. I think on your agenda, it was noted by the town that, or the Rex and Parks, that they'd never paid for a sign for citizen-based projects, but I just confirmed this with Brendan Moore, who is the former facility administrator, that all Carborough Parks projects, the town has paid for a sign to recognize all of our projects. We've raised over $3,000, which has allowed the garden to be fenced, plots, soil to be put in the garden. I just brought just a couple of real quick pictures of other signs that the town has purchased, and this is just something similar to what we're looking for. Nothing fancy, nothing big. Doesn't have to have logos, but you know, to show appreciation, you know, for everybody who supports the and for Carborough Parks Project, getting this project.
Can we make these signs?
We have made some of them. The signs around, like, the dog park, our sign shop has made, but our graphics capabilities are limited, and it would be a simple sign like the ones outside the dog park, the brown with white lettering.
Mm-hmm. Which is what one of
those are the pictures
is.
There.
And I think Brendan said he's used signs now in the past or the town. Yeah. So.
Okay, well, let's refer that to the staff on sure. The rest of this. Mm-hmm. All right, is there a motion to that?
Thanks for the work of the Parks Project.
Second.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Nice.
Beautiful.
Looks good.
And then following are just the specific details for the rainwater catchment proposal.
Cool.
And that's it.
Thank you.
All right,
thanks.
Very good.
Thank you.
All right. It's been moved and seconded for the resolution referring this to staff along with the sign request. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, not passed unanimously. Item D3.
This item is to discuss an opportunity for a photovoltaic installation at Town Commons. This is something we've been working on at the staff level for quite some time, and it's to a point now where we're ready to present to the board for some action. Randy Dodd and Chris, one of our Delta interns, is going to present.
Before y'all start, just want to thank you for the previous item that was in the consent agenda, consent
agenda, and just want to acknowledge all the work that y'all have done, and thank you for that. It's really exciting to be able to move on to multifamily housing weatherization improvements.
Great work.
Absolutely.
And
thank you, Tammy, for mentioning
that. Maybe you can explain what a Delta intern is.
Yes, Delta intern is a program sponsored federal stimulus funds, and the acronym is
Developing Energy Leaders Through Action. Great job, dollars at work, I guess.
Yeah.
All right, great.
It's money funneled through the State Energy Office, and UNC has received a chunk of that that's supporting a number of interns that we've been fortunate enough here in Carver to have several working with us recently, including Chris. This is Chris Lazinski, been working with us since September?
Early September.
Yeah. And he was preceded by another Delta fellow who took a Fulbright subsequently. Her name is Vanessa Fixmer O'Rise, and she helped kickstart the project I'd like to share with you today. And basically, you know, our motivation, I think these are things we all understand, that we'd like the town to be leading by example with renewable energy projects. Of course, we have policy interests that we're trying to support regarding sustainability and climate protection. We have this fortunate situation here that we have a cleared land with a market stall almost facing due south that has great solar access, very high visibility at these sites. So these are some of the prime opportunities that are motivating us. There are some constraints to be aware of, mainly the access to capital and equity and financing. How are we going to make this work financially in our current economy and with our tight budget? Staff capacity, this is, you know, sort of charting new territory for us as a staff, and take some time to make something like this work. And there are important things we have to look at legal, but probably more financial and operationally to make work. So that's what we've been doing, what I like to refer to as sort of a pre-feasibility analysis to just do our homework to see what we have to work with. It's a lot of people to thank. Most importantly, the Delta Fellows that I already mentioned, a variety of folks in the community, locally, some solar installers and energy companies, and some other folks here whose names I'm sure you remember. One particular entity or person and organization I'd like to highlight, and we'll talk a little bit about, is Appalachian Institute for Renewable Energy. It's a nonprofit organization out of Boone, and their specialty is community investing to support renewable energy installations. RIO is their outreach and education director. We've included a letter from RIO in the packet, and did want to mention that RIO is a product of Carborough, grew up here, and his folks still live here. And he's actually active on the Transition Carborough Chapel Hill group until he relocated up to Boone. But both the Delta Fellows and myself have had several conversations with RIO and met with him. He's been down there a couple times and is definitely excited about the opportunity to work with us. Basically, you know, there's lots of details in the pack, and I'm not going to try to go through all of them, but through our analysis, we sort of identified two processes for moving forward, and one of them would be to go through a bid and RFP process like we do with a lot of projects we contract, and the other was to work with Appalachian Institute for Renewable Energy to pursue a feasibility study as a first step. And basically the advantage of, and I'll talk a little bit about the advantages and disadvantages of both as I go through this, but our recommendation is leaning towards working with AIR, and we'll describe the reasons why we'd like to do that. Not sure if you're going to be able to read all of the words here, and it's not really that important, all the details inside these boxes, but mainly wanted you to get the conceptual idea of what we're thinking about. The parties that would be involved would be, we would propose this to be a grid interconnected system and, with Duke Energy, our utility provider, having Appalachian Institute for Renewable Energy really coordinate many aspects of the project. We would be serving as the host for this system for a period of a minimum of 5 years, a maximum of 10 years. at which point the investors in the system, which would be people we would seek in the locally here in the community, would transfer ownership of the system that they would own initially and then transfer that to the town. They would be supported initially by a solar installer who would do all the design and construction and installation of the system. I mean, I'm happy to answer any questions you might have about some of the details of how this would work, but this is the basic model that we're looking at. This is, you know, the stall that we have great access to that we would be working with. This is two of the folks we contacted with. Basically, you know, we asked them, well, how might this installation work? What would you recommend? They basically showed this identical sighting of where they would recommend a system. In this case, it's a 5-kilowatt system. And this is just another perspective of that. This is just, they've also recommended specific manufacturers of panels, and these are shots of the specific manufacturers and panels they recommended.
Who is that, Randy, by the way?
One of them is Schott.
Schott, and then, did it say on this last one? Oh, those are the Schott ones.
It's in the packet, in the table here.
If it's in the packet, I'll find it.
Yeah,
Randy, that's a 5-kilowatt, and I saw that the max would be a 10. Is that 10 allowable given the space, or is that just...
Well, if we wanted to stay on the same pitch roof here, you know, we couldn't go all the way up to 10. There's not enough space to do that on the lower pitch roof. We mentioned 10 as a sort of an outside possibility because the interconnection agreement with Duke becomes much more involved, both, you know, time and expense that would be involved if we were to go above 10. So we want to stay below 10. But if we were able to get a lot of investors interested, we don't want to necessarily constrain ourselves to 5. There's other considerations as well in thinking about the size. If we wanted to work with NC Green Power, they currently have a cap of 5-kilowatt size system. So if they were our REC provider, you know, that would provide a constraint there, but that may not necessarily be something we want to constrain ourselves with. So that's why we're...
Is that limitation per project or per entity?
It's
like
per connection.
Town of Carborough?
Yeah, it's per project site. Yeah. So if we had a lot of investor interest, we could find a second suitable site and do it there, but that would be the maximum for that specific connection.
Okay.
It would be 5 kilowatts for green power.
Given that roof area, it seems reasonable, I guess.
So, you know, basically the fundamental concept is to pursue a pilot community-based solar electric installation. We've done a lot of review and outreach looking at this concept so far. You know, we're looking at a 5 to 10 kilowatt system. The total value of that would be roughly in the $25,000 to $45,000 range. Recommending our next step be to work with Appalachian Institute for Renewable Energy to do a detailed feasibility study. They are asking for $2,000 for that. That could be something that would be picked up by the investors, but at this point we can't guarantee that. We do understand that cost could be something that the investors could use as part of the basis for what they receive incentives on, so that would be a factor that would perhaps encourage them to consider that. But really, you know, the most important thing here is we're looking at this community investing model, so we would be working with AIR to go out into the community to find local investors who are really motivated by wanting to support this idea and support Carborough and moving forward with renewable energy. So we're not thinking this is not a model of investors who are necessarily strictly financially motivated. So we're seeking to next step to do a feasibility study. AIR would facilitate an open process for selecting the installers and for finding the community investors, and then really informing them of all of everything they need to know to help them in their decision about whether to become investors. The RFP option, one of the things we do want to make sure we convey is that by talking with all the folks that we've talked with, we're just not sure that some, if we were to just go out to bid with this as an independent project, that we'd get someone who would, it's a small project for most of these companies that are doing this work. And, you know, without the town being in a position to put the capital up front, it's just a little bit of uncertainty about whether we'll get anyone to nibble on this idea.
Do we know how much capital is involved?
About 25,000 as a low end for a 5-kilowatt system. It might be more like $30,000. And then if we were to have a system that was sized a little bit larger than that, it could go up to as much as perhaps $45,000, something in that range.
And have we done, I'm just a little quick wanting to kind of examine the statement that the town can put the money up front. Have we, like, looked at the cost? Has there been a cost-benefit analysis of, you know, if we didn't get investors in the town, you know, looking at the town as the investor of last resort, you know, what the financial impact would be?
We have some sense of the, you know, all of the financial information if we were to build a system in terms of the annual income that would be generated from it and the return on investment and you know, the amount of equity and the all the factors that we need to put into that. The, you know, it would just be initial equity, you know, certainly not in our current annual budget, and so it would be something we'd have to talk about for, I guess, for future budget cycles.
Right. I guess my point is that if it's an investment, you know, then it might, you know, and well, if we're actually going to be recouping that investment over time.
Well, let me jump in on that, because okay. is part of the idea here that investors in this benefit from some sort of federal tax benefits. So then the town doesn't get those tax benefits.
As a public entity, we can't benefit from all the incentives that private parties can. So that's really the
crux of it. And so it's not affordable without those.
We had looked into that a couple years ago, if you remember. And that
really is the reason for this sort of unusual structure that you're proposing.
Absolutely.
As far as getting private investors
to
come in and put their money up to make it happen, is because we do get to benefit from the federal tax.
It's a win-win for both parties.
Yeah, we looked at this several years ago, if you remember, and we couldn't come up with the entity. It looks like you have done that. It's awesome.
Great work.
But, Randy, you were referring to putting up the money for the RFP option. Is that? Did I understand that correctly or not?
Well,
the feasibility study.
The Appalachian Institute for Renewable Energy would be looking for $2,000 to complete this feasibility study, which, you know, could potentially be financed by the.
I thought you were referring to, because this is such a small project, for the RFP option, that there was some way to make it more attractive to those investors. But I guess that's not what you said.
No, there's two separate approaches, the RFP and the
And even if we were to pursue an RFP approach, we're not sure that we could do that without incurring some costs associated with that, because there's some technical expertise that we might have to look to some contractor to provide some support with. So that's what we have to share.
Wonderful.
Very exciting. I think that I would like for us to consider this as an example and maybe an opportunity to look into and be thinking about like a green capital improvement program where we could identify other spaces that we have, or roof spaces or other places where we could pursue similar options like this, and have that also serve to kind of measure how we're doing relative to our wanting to mitigate greenhouse gas emissions as a town.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Sammy. A couple years ago, I know with James Harris and Randy, we talked about this, and we identified some spaces. So we might dig up what we already looked at. I know we talked extensively about Martin Luther King Park and Anderson Park as being space that, you know, can capture a lot of photo mosaic.
And I really like the air option because it's really in tune with kind of our local living economy values to keep it with local investors, people who have those tax liabilities to benefit from them. And I was very excited to hear about possibly Durham Tech being involved with this project as an educational opportunity. That's a great thing to pursue. And then I just have one question. I was curious about the question of the town receiving revenue or not.
The town, so under this model, the details of the agreement will be worked out during the feasibility study process, but it's likely that the way that would work is that during the 5+ years that the town would not own this system, that all the revenue from the sale of electricity and from the sale of renewable energy credits would be the investors would want to take that so that they would be able to get their return on their investment as quickly as possible. But then for the remainder of the life of the system, which would be warranted at probably a minimum of 15 years, but likely could have a considerably longer life than that, the town would own the system and receive that revenue, which would be, for a 5-kilowatt system, would be on the order of about $1,000 a year, maybe a little bit more.
Cool. Great. Well,
all right. Let's do it.
Let's just move to.
You want to move to resolution attachment.
Resolution attachment A.
Moved by Simeon and seconded by Randy. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Matter passes unanimously.
Thank you.
That's very exciting.
Great.
Very cool.
And Sammy, I'd like to talk to you at some point about the green capital investment.
Yeah, let's do that.
Because that could be part of my job description too. You know, flexible job description. Tori back there. We also just picked up Tori B.
Cool.
So we have a few guys kind of working on those sort of projects. So I'd be happy to talk.
Awesome. Let's do it. Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
Sammy, just more to that point, the Delta interns have started research on green CIP. It's something that I asked them to do a few months ago, but because we're in this sort of transition period, now is not the time for us to make any of these changes, so we'll hold off until a more appropriate time.
Great. Thanks.
Great. All right. Are there other matters from the board? I think there are.
We've been getting a steady stream of emails from the people at Smith Level Road, and I think we need a response. We need to be doing something other than just waiting to see what happens. I think the people who live there, who are individually being approached, this is a very unnerving experience, and kind of wait and see what happens, wait till the next meeting. Wait till we meet with DOT. That would really help.
DOT's not waiting.
Because DOT's not waiting.
Exactly.
DOT is working with people individually instead of with us as a town. They're kind of, changing the rules after the fact. And I.
Matt, do you want to keep Trish here? Oh, she's still here. Okay, sorry.
And we keep hearing from people who are very, very upset, and we've got to be able to give them a solid answer, and we need to somehow get in there and be advocating for them and not let DOT push us around. Discuss.
Well, Matt, could you kind of summarize again your last meeting with DOT and where you think we are?
We met with DOT, and DOT has made significant changes to the plans. We spoke to somebody from DOT today. We should be receiving the plans by the end of this week. That's been sort of what the holdup is the neighbors haven't seen the new plans. They're reacting to their memory of the previous plans.
They're reacting to being contacted by people from DOT talking to them about their property value. That's what they're reacting to.
And that's how DOT staff said that they're going to handle it. We did request a public meeting to discuss this in a group setting, and they declined. They would rather work with the neighborhood groups at the homeowners association level. So they're contacting the individual property owners to show them the updated plans and contacting the homeowners associations to set up group meetings. But they, you know, they were not interested in coming back to a public meeting for that.
Well, so how are we then getting in there and advocating for our citizens with DOT?
All of the changes that were made between the previous plans were changes that the town staff advocated for on behalf of the Smith Level Road residents.
And the residents have not seen those?
No, unless they've met with Mr. Parrish recently, they've not seen them.
And have we seen them? If we advocated for them?
Yes, we saw them at the December meeting that we had.
But we haven't seen them.
We haven't seen them.
No, because we don't have the paper copies or the electronic copy yet. That's what we're waiting on from DOT.
So we'll get those next week, you think?
And those aren't secret, so we can share those with the neighbors. We don't.
No, they will be shared with the neighbors. We just haven't gotten them to give them to the neighbors. Mm-hmm.
But I'm not understanding why we would be in the position of giving it to the neighbors when DOT is contacting neighbors directly. In other words, it seems like a maneuver of divide and conquer.
And they're contacting them individually.
And it's not like they don't have the. I mean, what are they sharing with the neighbors? They obviously have the copies. It's not like a hard thing to stop by a town hall and drop them off on their way to the neighbors, talking to the neighbors.
Well, let me... Matt doesn't work for DOT, so I'm not sure he can answer the question for you of like why DOT is doing this. But
Sorry, Matt.
I'm just saying, you know, what is it that we would like to see, or you know, I mean, how do you?
I don't think it's
we had talked to DOT about the possibility of having a public meeting, and the sort of lower level people who were here at the time said, sure, that sounds like a good idea. Sounds like somewhat higher level people are now saying, no, that's not a good idea. So is it our goal and desire to have this, to return to the kind of process that we outlined in December?
I want to know what the new plan is. I want to know what are the neighbors so upset about. What has changed that's having a more severe impact, at least from the neighbor's point of view. I just don't feel like I know what's going on.
Well, and I think part of the problem is that very few of us in Carborough do know what's going on, and including the neighbors. And I think, frankly, part of the issue is that they're understandably concerned about what they don't know about this project. So, you know, I think if we... I think the most constructive thing to do would be to for us to persuade DOT that they're not taking the right approach by declining to have a public meeting about this.
Well, Mark, if DOT has incorporated in the most current plan things that our staff recommended, it certainly would make sense that it be presented in a public forum in which our staff and we are involved.
Well, that's what I'm suggesting.
Right.
So, if that's what the goal is, and I'd like to hear from the board whether that is what the goal is. But if that's what the goal is, then my suggestion is that we enlist our state legislative delegation in helping us to persuade DOT that we are a community about public meetings, if nothing else, above all else, and that is really the right way to to get their information out there. Does that make sense to people as far as some way to proceed on this?
Yeah.
Well, so can you tell me a little bit more about the approaching individual households and what they're trying to accomplish and how that's different than what we had originally? How what they're trying to accomplish is different than what we originally thought, because that seems to have people very upset.
Well, I don't know that it is necessarily different in its sort of ultimate object. It's for me, the issue is mostly that it's a different procedure from what we had discussed.
Yeah.
And I would like to feel that the message that DOT is sending to the various different individuals they're talking to is the same from one to the next. And the way to ensure that that's the case is by having a group meeting. So
exactly.
That's why I'm saying, so lay out your plan in public,
so that all interested parties can come and participate in the discussion, even if it may not be the most comfortable discussion on record.
Okay.
But is all that contingent on what we discover later this week or next week the plan actually entails?
Not really, because the whole point is, whatever the plan is, the problem is that people don't know. Right. And the opportunity for people to know what the plan is by having a public meeting about it. And I don't feel that it should be our planning staff's responsibility to explain DOT's plan for them to the public. Mm-hmm. It's DOT's, in my view, obligation to explain their plan to the public. And not only is that would that be a lot of extra work for our town staff, but then if it doesn't happen the way that our town staff describes, it won't be their fault, but they will be blamed nonetheless. Mm-hmm. So I really think it's best for DOT to explain for themselves what their plan is. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense as far as...
I'm just concerned that it might be 2 months before we would get, and if we have the plan later on this week, and if it addresses a great majority of the concerns, I can just kind of see for the next 2 months phone calls keep happening to Smith level folks, and you know.
But I mean, but here's what I'm saying is, this business about DOT calling people, none of us have any control over who DOT calls,
right?
or what they say. I mean, I don't know what to say about that except that the real point is that DOT should have an open process of communication here, and that what they're going for, it seems to me, is a sort of closed process of communication.
Mm-hmm. Well, when we get an electronic version of the new plan, can we at least put it on our website so it can be further?
Yes, we have a spot picked out on the website. It'll be a page like the Weaver Street construction page where all the documents related to Smith Level Road will be in one spot.
You guys, I'm sure by now, have an email list of people who've been in on this discussion, so you can certainly let all of them know that it's there.
And they've received information. Every time the town has received information, we've sent it back out to the neighbors. Mm-hmm. The, what DOT staff indicated to us is they're following their standard right-of-way acquisition procedure in this case. This is no different than any other DOT project. They're going to contact the individual property owners because at the end of the day, this is a private decision between a private property owner and the DOT. The town's limited in our ability to advocate because of that. They already had at least one person sign over the right-of-way. What they're doing is based on the updated design that was presented to us in December, is they're going back to people who they've initially made a presentation to present the new set of plans with the reduced right-of-way, reduced easement requirements, or in some cases even eliminated easement requirements. If you recall, my staff memo from 2 weeks ago indicated that there were a number of reduced or eliminated easements or right-of-ways. And that's what the updated plans are showing, and it'll include a written list from DOT as to what exactly has been changed between the version that was here a few weeks ago and the version that is the most current, and also some other information that was requested by the board, definitions of, you know, right-of-way versus easement, what can be done in right-of-way versus easement, and all of that. And so that's what we're waiting on, is that complete package of information.
Matt, that information you just shared with us may be valuable as a minimum for just having residents feel like they're not in the dark, just like what is coming, what they can expect from DOT. And beyond that, also wondering, so this is actually a proposal to buy their right-of-ways, or is this just sharing information until the time when they present this officially to the town? Like, where?
I don't know if they're making purchase offers at this time.
Is that information we might be able to share with the residents, including that other information we know?
That other information was sent to the neighborhood. When I sent it to the board, everybody in the neighborhoods were copied on it as well.
Okay, thanks.
So do we need a motion to contact legislators? You kind of threw it out there.
If that's what you would like me to do, I will get in touch with them, but it would be helpful to have a motion.
So moved.
Second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded.
And what's the exact motion then? To contact our legislators to urge DOT to have this meeting as soon as possible to kind of explain the new maps and explain.
Right.
In other words, the physical
scope of the mm-hmm. of what it is that they're taking and what it is they're building. Right.
Because in other words, when DOT was here last with a lot of folks that lived on Smith Level Road, they were all left, as were we, with the impression that there would be a follow-up meeting of some sort.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I have a question.
Point being to advocate for making that happen.
Right.
Mark, do you have any sense of your ability as mayor to advocate directly with our DOT board rep? Because that would certainly be more expeditious than talking to our legislators and then finding the time and the feedback and, what did that.
Well, I mean, I think our legislators are already aware that this is a controversial project and have taken an interest in it. I could certainly try that as well.
Maybe add that to the.
I don't think it's either or. Legislators all contact.
Or member.
Yeah.
DOT provision staff.
Sure.
Accepted.
All right. Okay. It's been moved and seconded by Jackie. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously. All right. I hesitate to even ask, but are there any other matters from the board?
I don't have any, except that I'll probably forward some questions in relation to the first agenda item that I didn't, it just slipped by me, I forgot to ask, so just be expecting.
Which one was that?
You mean the Carolina?
The energy efficiency one that we had in our consent agenda.
Oh, the ARRA.
Yeah.
Energy efficiency in buildings. Okay. All right. Well, we'll look for those. All right. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Right. I'm passing on the sleep.